Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Andrew Johnson of National Review in for Jim Garrity today, who is cruising somewhere, Caribbean, who knows. But anyway, he's out for the week, and we're thrilled to have Andrew in his place as usual. And Andrew, good, bad, and crazy martinis today as usual. And for the most part, everyone's kind of basking in the aftermath of a very successful midterm season for Republicans and conservatives, but there is still some unfinished business. There's still some vote counting in a few House races and the Alaska Senate race. But in Louisiana, it's game on for round two. This last Tuesday is really just the primary. Mary Landrieu came in first place. That's the good news for her. The bad news is she didn't get a majority of the vote, which means she and Congressman Bill Cassidy are headed to a runoff, and she is a decided underdog in that race. Her comments on race and gender probably didn't help her very much heading into this runoff. But she decided to hit the ground running after the vote on Tuesday by trying to separate herself from Bill Cassidy on the issue of Katrina, which, of course, is still a major issue down in Louisiana. When the New Orleans VA hospital needed to be rebuilt out of the rubble of Katrina and Rita, she tweeted, hashtag where was Bill? She says, when this hospital needed a champion to build and rebuild literally out of the rubble of Katrina and Rita, where was Senator Landrieu standing here and fighting? Where was Bill? She said to her supporters. So Cassidy just tweeted back and said, oh, yeah, I was setting up a surge hospital in the parking lot of a Kmart so people could get medical attention in the wake of the storm. So, Mary Landrieu, you might want some new researchers.
Bill Cassidy wasn't even in the House at the time. He actually wasn't even, he served in the Louisiana State Senate before that. I mean, this was when he was a private, you know, a private citizen, just a doctor at the time. And he was taking action into his own hands. I mean, was he a lawmaker? No, but it kind of shows the desperation that Mary Landrieu is trying to pull the wool over a lot of these voters' eyes. I mean, there's already reports that Democrats are jumping ship. They don't want to put money into Louisiana. What's the point? They already lost the Senate by a large margin. It's an uphill climb for her anyway. So I expect her to probably throw everything in the kitchen sink at Cassidy, including, you know, asking where he was, even if it's a bit of a misleading question.
Yeah, exactly right. So as you clearly pointed out, he wasn't an elected official of any kind, so he wasn't in a position to lead any sort of legislative effort. So he didn't necessarily even need to have a great answer to this question. It was just kind of a political dare, practically, on her part. And then he had a home run to knock it out of the park. His tweet even had a link to the story back at the time of how he was doing great work helping to set up a temporary hospital in the parking lot of this Kmart. So not only...
And he's done a lot of work like this in the past. I mean, I know he's founded a couple clinics, I believe, in the Baton Rouge area, and he has a mobile clinic that he sort of drives around the state. This is before he was an elected official. He was in office. So I mean, again, even if she didn't know about his specific involvement or his specific response in the aftermath of Katrina, he's clearly been a very virtuous, you know, citizen using his experience as a doctor to help people around. So you would have thought that maybe they would have been able to catch on, like, well, maybe he did something similar after Katrina as well, just knowing a little bit about his background.
Yeah, like you said, desperation makes you do some crazy things, and that's where Mary Landrieu is right now with less than a month to go before the runoff. All right, on to the bad martini now, and we've had Jonathan Gruber in the Three Martini Lunch before. It was back in July. There is a challenge to the law of Obamacare because it clearly states many times in the law you can only get subsidies through state exchanges. But since so many states opted not to do an exchange, many people are getting it through the federal government, and the people bringing forth the lawsuit say this is clearly in violation of the statute as it was written. And Jonathan Gruber was on tape back during the debate saying, yes, absolutely, you can only get it through the state exchanges. So he's helped our side once before, and now he's helping it again in the most arrogant way possible. Jonathan Gruber, this is a recording actually from 2013 that a conservative organization dug up on YouTube, where Jonathan Gruber basically explains to all of us that if they told the truth about Obamacare, it had no chance of passing, so essentially they had to lie to us. Listen to this.
This bill was written in a tortured way to make sure CBO did not score the mandate as taxes. If CBO scored the mandate as taxes, the bill dies. Okay? So it's written to do that. In terms of risk-rated subsidies, if you had a law which said healthy people are going to pay in, it made explicit that healthy people pay in and sick people get money, it would not have passed. Okay? Just like the people... lack of transparency is a huge political advantage. And basically, you know, call it the stupidity of the American voter or whatever. But basically, that was really, really critical to getting the thing to pass. And, you know, it's the second best argument. Look, I wish Mark was right. We can make it all transparent. But I'd rather have this law than not. So it's kind of like his reporter story. You know, yeah, there's things I wish I could change, but I'd rather have this law than not.
So, Andrew, is this guy not a microcosm of the Obama administration completely trying to blind the American people to the details and basically confirming every criticism we had of the law in almost one soundbite?
I know. And can you imagine if that came out even just a week ago, how much more of a slaughtering probably Election Day would have been?
Right.
You know, who knows what would have happened in the New Hampshire races, all these things. I mean, that is such an arrogant comment to A, just to say literally what he said, but also to think that there would be nothing wrong with it, that people would just accept it, that it wouldn't come out, that people would just defer to him basically calling them stupid and whatnot. It's just an example of basically what it looks like their playbook was. I mean, he sort of walked through what the thinking was to get it passed. They knew it was unpopular politically, despite saying, you know, it's kind of which is it? Sometimes it's what the people want. Sometimes they knew people didn't want it anyway, so they had to, you know, kind of pull these tricks out and try and trick people to get it passed. But as soon as I heard that, I just thought, can you imagine if that came out earlier and that was just another something else that Republican candidates could throw into campaign ads leading into the midterms or anything else?
Go back to the first martini. Bill Cassidy, have at it.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, on to the crazy martini now. And of course, among many positive results for the GOP this past Tuesday was Mia Love winning Utah's 4th Congressional District, as she narrowly lost it in 2012. It was an open seat this time around, and she narrowly won it this time. If asked about it, she's very quick to say, I didn't win a Utah House seat based on the fact that I'm black. So, as she says, you know, I had good ideas, bedrock conservative principles. The people in my district agree with those. Well, apparently at the Huffington Post, that's not good enough, because Darren Smith, a blogger, and this story was picked up by the Daily Caller, says that essentially Mia Love is simply benefiting by white male privilege. Here's what he says. She appears publicly unhampered by the daily grind of white racism that affects other racial minorities within the United States. Unlike most of them, Mia gets to walk through the hallowed doorways of white institutions controlled by elite, powerful men. She is allowed to pass through in her black female body with the understanding that she must not see, speak, or openly advocate for anything related to race or gender, an unholy compromise. Hence, she might look black, but her politics are red. This is one way white privilege is reproduced at the legislative level of government. And then it says basically she lives in a white male Christian context. So once again, Andrew, you just can't be black and conservative unless there's some evil underlying scheme going on here.
Yeah, exactly. And again, this is just sort of as condescending as the Gruber video was a couple minutes ago. I'm sure you guys talked about last week how the NAACP didn't recognize Tim Scott or Mia Love, or actually another black Republican who was elected this past cycle, who I have a story on National Review, so check that out. Will Hurd from Texas, former actually undercover CIA agent, worked in Afghanistan and Pakistan, and came back a few years ago and ran for Congress and ended up beating a sitting Democratic incumbent. But you know, the NAACP after the election didn't recognize any of them in the sort of post-election comment or statement that they put out. It's just more of that norm, is that they don't know any better. They're not really black. They can't be Republican and be, you know, and look out for black interests. They don't have an understanding of what it means to be black. Whatever it is, whatever the nonsensical argument is, it's just the latest being hurled at Mia Love. And sadly, she may have to get used to it. It'll probably follow her throughout most of her legislative career. She's proven that she knows how to respond to it, how to handle it, how to not let it get to her. So you know, she has the upper hand, it looks like, and she won. So
could have been three crazies today, really, when you think about it.
I know. I was just thinking that. I was actually like, you know, these were all pretty outlandish things that were happening, but hey, like you said, desperate times call for desperate measures, and I guess the left is the one that are sort of reeling after Tuesday.
Yeah, it's kind of fun to watch. Andrew, thanks as always for being here. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Take it easy. Thanks.
Andrew Johnson of National Review in for Jim Garrity this week. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us. Please join us again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.